You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here's your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
I'm Megan Brady, and you're listening to Gallop and Getaways for Thursday, March 26th. As always, you'll find us here on Horses in the Morning every fourth Thursday, talking about all things equestrian travel. Gallop and Getaways, the podcast exploring culture, horses, and standards behind equestrian travel.
Ride away with us on this special monthly equestrian travel episode, brought to you by the Equestrian Travel Association.
Welcome to Galloping Getaways, the podcast that explores the soul of equestrian travel, where meaningful adventure, cultural connection, and thoughtful horsemanship come together. I'm your host, Megan Brady, equine wellness specialist, mentor, and founder of the Equestrian Travel Association. Joining me today on today's conversation is Glenn from Horses in the Morning.
Hey, Megan, good to be on again.
Yeah, so happy to have you on.
And you're still in Florida, right? You haven't made the great journey north yet?
Not yet. It's still cold up there.
Staying in Florida for another you know, it's funny because there are still snowbirds. I think there's less of them in Florida than there used to be. A lot of people just moved here.
Yeah.
But it is nice. We know that about Easter time, most of the senior citizens that are snowbirds leave. They want to be home for Easter, so yep. We can get in restaurants again about that time.
That's fair. Yeah, and Easter's early this year, isn't it?
I don't know.
So they might be... Yeah, it's the first weekend of April.
Oh, wow. It's really early this year.
Yeah. So maybe you'll get a little break.
The exodus will happen sooner then.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, warm up north so they all leave Florida.
Yeah. Well, it was weird. I was just up north last week, and it was 85 in the beginning of the week, and then it turned to, 25 by the time I left. So I'm not ready to go back.
Back to Wellington.
Yep. Back to Florida I go.
So what are we doing today?
So today I thought we would talk about taking a deeper look at equestrian destinations and the people, horses, and the philosophies that shape the experiences, and be part of that conversation about what really makes a equestrian vacation really special. That's beyond the scenery and adventure. And it gives us a window into how different programs care for their horses and how horsemanship is practiced in different places and what truly makes a destination exceptional, not just for the riders who visit, but the horses that make the experience possible.
That sounds, it is hard because all of us that are horse people, we don't want to go to places that don't treat their horses well, right? So there is a lot. I mean, that's where you come in, obviously, but there's so much research and trying to find out. It's hard to do that yourself, actually, to find real information.
Yeah. And I know just from all my different travels is the horses really tell you the story, right? When you show up, they really can, you can see it, how well they're taken care of or, not. Unfortunately, I've been to both extremes. And I think that really makes your experience as the traveler something exceptional. It's not just about the scenery, and obviously that matters, and the food and where you're sleeping and all that stuff, but really how well the horses are taken care of. And I mean it a little bit more than just are they fed, are they groomed, but just how well are they cared for and loved.
Yeah. And how well trained they are. I mean, that's another thing too, right? I mean,
yes, 1000%.
Depending on the experience level of the visitor, of the guest, and they always assume too. I know we'll get into some of this, but they always assume they have to assume that you know nothing.
Yes,
until you prove to them that you know something. I mean, that's just their insurance requires that.
Right. But I'll be honest, I've been on some, this is many, many years ago, but I have been on some, vacations or even day trips where they took my word for it. And I was like, that's interesting. So that, they put me on a horse that definitely wasn't, beginner ready. And I was like, wow, all right, well, You took my word for it. That's scary.
Well, they always say,
thankfully, I know what I'm doing.
They always say, if you're experienced, never mention that because they give you the horse that nobody wants. You
know? Well, I've learned that lesson. I always say I know nothing.
Yeah, Jennifer always does that too. She's like, I've been riding a little while, not long.
Yeah, not very long. No, not at all.
Because you don't want the plug either. I mean, you want the middle one.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want them to think I've never been on a horse before, but I don't want them to know what I actually have experienced.
So, you know, when we start the conversation, you're kind of evaluating a destination based on, you know, experience and that kind of thing, but it goes deeper than that. So what do you look for that gets deeper than that?
I think it just goes beyond, you know, did the horses behave well? Was the scenery beautiful? Did they have fun? And those things, you know, absolutely matter, like we just said, but I really want to talk about, you know, do the guests really feel like they're part of the operation? You know, they see the ride, they see the hospitality, but we don't always see the systems behind the scenes that support the horses themselves. So, you know, how the horses are managed, how are they rotated? How long do they, you know, do they stay sound in the program, and what the culture is around that, around the horsemanship of each program. And that's different for every program. It's different from every area of our country and then every other area of the world. And I think those things tell you a lot more whether the place is truly exceptional or not.
You've been at a lot of these places around the mm-hmm. world. How many invite the guests to have a picture of that kind of behind the scenes, or do most of them try and hide it?
I would say most of them, I think most of them have, in my experience, if I ask, which I always do, is they have been very forthcoming, and I've gotten to see all behind the scenes. I've seen farriers work on horses. You know, they show me if they have, you know, big ranches might have, you know, horses out to pasture for, you know, several months while they're on rotation. They'll show me those group of horses. You know, I've been lucky in that way. And I think it is just maybe asking to see it, because I think people don't ask that.
Well, and they're going to assume that you don't really care about that, right?
Right. Yeah. Right. And so when I go in, I care about that. And so I have really not been, thankfully, been denied that. You know, everybody has been very forthcoming with that. So, and that's always a fun little treat for me, because I get to see, you know, like behind the scenes. You know, I've been walked through feed rooms, I've been walked through their tack room, and, you know, how things are really operated. And, you know, so, especially for some of those really big programs, you know, those big ranches where they have, you know, a decent amount of people there for a week or whatever, you know, they have to keep things really running, and, you know, their horses, right? So like, you know, one day a horse might pull a shoe, or so they can't be used that way. So like, what is their protocol for bringing another horse in and matching that horse now with this new rider that horse has? So it's always interesting to me how their program operates in that way.
What's the first thing you look at when you show up? What's the first thing? Let's maybe rephrase that. What's the first thing that somebody that shows up should be looking at?
I always look at the horse's body condition personally. That's the first thing that I look for. And, you know, because of my background, you know, that's something that
you
I always...
equine body workers.
Yes. So I'm an equine body worker. And so I always look at their body condition and how they move
you
and
find
their posture.
Wanting to adjust them all.
Yes, yeah. I do actually. I'm like,
they really don't like that when
tight.
You go in and start pushing and prodding.
No, I don't do that. I try to turn that side of myself off. Yes, I
That's
do
like
try to
farrier
turn that.
Like a showing up and going, these feet suck.
Yeah, 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 yeah. You don't want to sit next to me either at a horse show, because I'm always like,
That's funny.
It is. And honestly, the horse's like attitude towards people, you know, we've all been in those barns where, you know, the horses, you know, people walk by and their horses, you know, pin their ears, or, you know, or you have the, you know, horses that are really, you know, friendly, and, you know, that tells us something, right? They're always talking to us in their language.
Well, what do you do when you walk in and you go, Jamie and I've said this for 15 years on the show, that every barn has a feel. And when you walk in mm-hmm. the barn, you get the feel. You all know what we're talking about.
Yep.
What happens when you've just paid for this vacation, you get in, the barn has that feel?
Yeah, that's hard.
You've been there. I mean,
yeah, I have. I unfortunately have.
Make the best of it. And
yeah, I mean, there has been one case in all my experience that I actually left, and that was a really, I would say,
what did you say?
An extreme case. And the horses were not well taken care of at all. And so the owner was not there at the time. And so I just, it was a smaller program. And it was actually in Georgia. And this was like 15 years ago. And I just said, you know, that I was very uncomfortable with the way the horse's condition was. And I wasn't comfortable getting on. And you know, they had different groups there, trail riders or whatever. And I just said that I wasn't going to be participating and that, and it was just a day trip. So it wasn't a vacation. Mm-hmm. So let me just, that's different. And I just asked for the owner's information. And so that I ended up emailing them. And I will say in that case, I did end up calling authorities because it was abusive. Yeah. Wow. It was abusive. But in the case that we're talking about, when it's just, you know, you kind of get like the ick or it's just, you don't feel very comfortable. You know, I don't think there's anything wrong, especially if you see horses that, you know, you're uncomfortable, you know, sitting on, saying something. And unfortunately, if you're on a vacation, you know, you can talk to the manager and talk about your concerns and you can always ask.
Yeah, you just paid thousands of dollars.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a really tough situation. And that's why I always really just encourage people to do so much research before you book these places, because there are places out there that aren't great. Yeah. But there are some places out there that are wonderful. I've been on them. So they do exist. And I just think you have to do your due diligence in researching and making sure that they uphold to the standards. And, you know, when you are booking these places, that you ask all the questions. And even if you look on their social media, look for videos, all the stuff, look at reviews. And obviously you can go to our website, but because we have all those people on there that uphold to the highest standards. But I think just doing your research, and then when you get there, just taking notice to what the horse's behavior is and their condition and their attitude.
I assume, too, there's countries, you know, depending on the country, too, there's good and bad in every country. I mean, people are people. But I assume there's countries, too, that are tend to be more welcoming. I'm thinking Mongolia. They love tourism.
Yeah.
I mean, they really do. You know, there's probably countries that are a little less enthusiastic about it. They do it. But I mean, Mongolia is the exception to the rule, I think, because they just love tourists.
Yeah. And that's on my bucket list. So yeah. I can't speak for that myself. But yes, that's been everything that I've read and everything that I've researched is they just, you know, welcome travelers. They want to have, they want people to really experience their horses and their culture.
But then they're a culture that welcomes visitors if they just show up at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and need a place to stay. That's just the culture, right?
Yeah, so, it's amazing.
Yeah, so tourism just fit beautifully into their culture anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I would say there was, you know, different parts of the country, obviously, too, are going to have different standards of the way they treat their horses. You know, they're not, you're not going to go, you know, even out west in our own country and find horses being treated like we treat them here in Wellington. You know what I mean? Or in Ocala, like the show horses aren't treated like they do ranch horses. So you have to put things all in perspective, right? And what is realistic and what is fair. And I think that's sometimes hard for people to make that adjustment. You know, I know like some of my dressage ladies, they go on these trips and they're like, oh my gosh, the horse, you know, just, you know, only gets trimmed every, you know, 8 weeks instead of every 5 weeks and all this stuff. And I'm like, yeah, but that's the way they're that works for that program, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, and a lot of them don't have shoes on because they don't need them either. So, I mean,
right, like it's okay.
Yet as a kind of a country guy, I look at Wellington and go, those horses don't have enough turnout.
I'm the same, and I'm here. They don't have enough turnout.
Right.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely
so it depends
not
on your view, right?
Yeah. And my horses are in Virginia right now, maybe not currently with the storms, but, you know, they have 15 hours of turnout, you know, like that's, you know, what I believe is the best. But I think, you know, people get a little narrow-minded in like what they think it should be. So.
And we all do that with certain things.
Of course.
Right? I mean, it's just
1,000%.
Again, human nature to do, you know. Yeah. You know what you know, and sometimes you don't know anything outside that box.
Yeah, exactly.
Hopefully we're changing that. I think that has gotten better through social media over the years. Because I think there's quote-unquote influencers, or they're just popular social media people now, whether they're Instagram or podcasts or whatever, that have kind of broken down those barriers across the board, because they're just people that you like. And yeah, they may do their horses a little bit different, but they're funny or entertaining. And I think that's just helping.
I agree 1,000%. I think it's been a good trend in our industry.
I know a lot of people pick on, you know, and I hate the word influencer, but, you know, pick on social media people. But it's true, that has helped. And, you know, when I started Horse Radio Network 18 years ago now, our, you know, our mission statement is uniting the horse world one show at a time. That was always our goal, is to have shows like this one that English, Western, backyard horse owners and competitors can listen to. Anybody can listen to it, because then you learn a little bit about everything in the horse world.
I love that.
You know, so that was always the mission here. It, you know, it took a little longer to get there than I expected.
Yeah, that's okay.
So do you think that most guests notice these kinds of things, or do they just show up and want good food and ride a horse?
That's a very good question. I don't think they notice generally. I think even horse people, like people who have horses and do that, I think they get in vacation mode sometimes, and they, you know, they don't always notice it. And especially people who aren't horse people, right? They don't really know what to look for.
They don't know what they don't know. So.
Right, exactly. And so, but I think once you start paying attention to the horses themselves, you do start noticing all those subtle signs. And, you know, I just know that even in my own work, you know, I talk to horse owners all the time about noticing subtle signs, and I start pointing them out, and they're like, oh my God, I never noticed that. Because sometimes it's just, you know, you don't know what you don't know. But, you know, things that I always encourage people to look for are like, are the horses relaxed? Do they seem curious and engaged, and things like that? And I think that's something that even non-horse people would be able to see. You know, you can tell when a horse is, you know, engaged with you and want to be around you, or if they're standing in the back of their stall with their ears pinned, you know. So, and I think that horses are incredibly honest animals in terms of how they're feeling and their, yeah, and how they're feeling in their body.
And, you know, if you're, and the non-horse people, the one of the big complaints you see from non-horse people when you see their comments, is that they were hoping to go faster, because everybody thinks they can ride a horse at a canter, you know?
Right.
So they get there and, you know, all of a sudden they're not allowed to. And all they see is the movies where you're riding across the open fields at a full gallop, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they want to be. But, you know, wisely, they don't let them do that.
So, yes. Yeah, so. Yes. Thank gosh they don't.
Do you also, I mean, you know, horses are part of the experience, even for horse people, but the other part is your accommodations, the food, and freaking how nice the people are.
Yes.
I mean, those are all things that I'm sure you notice right away too, because you're in this business.
Yes, definitely the second thing that I notice is staff, because also that tells me like what the work environment is. As we all know, if the staff isn't friendly, and if they are, you know, if they're happy working there, you know, it's a good work experience for everybody, the animals included. And so we've all been to places where staff has not been very kind or maybe hospitable or anything. So it also puts a damper on your vacation, right? When you have those experiences, or when you are dealing with a cranky waiter or waitress or things like that. And so I think the staff and the way the staff is being taken care of by the company is a huge indication of how the whole program runs as well.
Yeah. And you know, your website, you've vetted all these places. So, you know, yet if people dig a little deeper and go to reviews wherever they're looking for the reviews in places like this, there's always the negative and there's always the super positive.
Of course.
And you know, I don't know about you, but I always look in the middle. I always discount the super positive figuring that they're the person's relatives. And then I discount the super negatives because they were going to have a bad time no matter what they did.
Correct.
And then you always look in the middle and what's the 80% in the middle say?
Yep. Yeah. And I do the same thing, you know, because, you know, everybody can have a bad day, right? Whether it's the guest or, you know, the staff. But if you just, you know, you have these people on these reviews where I'm like, oh my gosh, you just weren't going to be happy. So you have those people too. So I think, like you said, following that middle road when you're looking at reviews.
So beyond the horses, there's tack, and tack can sometimes be really worn out. It hasn't been cleaned in 10 years. I assume you know you must notice that too, right away.
Yeah, and you know that's another thing. You know, a lot of these places, you know, because as in my world, you know, tack fitting is, you know, uber important for our performance horses and things like that. And, you know, a lot of these bigger ranches, I find, I ask them like, how do you fit tack and all this stuff? And, you know, some of the saddles they're old, you know, they have holes in them, some of them, or maybe they, if you go to different countries, they look completely different. And so I think when it comes to tack, as long as it fits the horse, you know, I always say like 80% where it's not too tight, where they're using things that makes it more comfortable for the horse, whether that is shimming pads or things like that, or having, you know, a hackmore on instead of a bit because it's going to be a beginner rider and they're going to use the reins as a balance point or things like that. And just noticing what they're doing to help the horse in that way. I think that is the most important because let's be honest, you know, when you have 100 head of horses, they're not going to get a saddle fitter out there every 6 months to fit all those saddles. Yeah. That's unrealistic.
Right. Yeah. We just have to, you have to compromise in your thinking too. It's just
a little bit, you know what I mean? And again, watch what's happening when the horse is getting tacked up, you know, and that's a huge, as we know, a huge indicator of tack fitting, you know? So just really being conscious of that. And I'll be honest, it's becoming more and more, even the bigger places that I go to, more of a conversation that I'm having with people as well as things as ulcers and things that these weren't conversations that I were having 10 years ago with these places. And they're just becoming more and more educated about what they can do better for the horses, even on, you know, from tack fitting to farrier work to nutrition.
Do you see a big difference between the daily operations and the stays? You know, the day rides that they don't have stays and then the places that you're staying for a week?
I would say in terms of,
definitely.
No, not a huge difference because it's the same. The horses are being used pretty much the same. They just, instead of going out for, you know, a 5 hour ride when you're on vacation, they may do 2 2-hour rides, things like that. I would say the only thing that might be different is the rider evaluation. I think on those shorter trips, you are not going to be going, you're not going to work yourself up over a week span to be able to canter in a field. You know, you are going to be having the walk ride along the beach, right? You know?
And then the other thing, you're just like that, the ride, right? You know, the thing you're evaluating is what kind of terrain, you know, what are the rides going to be like? Mm-hmm. Is it walk trot? Is it, you know, am I going to be cantering through a field? Am I going to be climbing mountains? All of that stuff is something you have to take into consideration when you're looking at where you want to go.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I know a lot of people, you know, they want to go out to the desert and they want to go on these trail rides, but then they, you know, they don't want to be, or they want to go out west, but they're afraid to go up and down mountains on horses. And I'm like, well, you're gonna.
Yeah, don't go to the Rockies then.
Yeah, then don't go there because they're gonna. Yeah. And I was out in Montana years ago and it was really fun. I was on with a group of people and we were all advanced riders and we were with a guide and there was five of us total. And he took us out kind of, you know, not on a trim trail. So we were out on this huge field. We galloped across the field. We got to see grizzly bears. It was awesome. It was like one of the coolest experiences. And it was a little scary as well, but he had a gun and a machete. So I wasn't as scared just in case. And so then he just was like, okay, we're going to just make a trail And I'm like, what? And so he just start walking his horse through this.
Whacking away.
Was no trail. Just and he just started taking his machete and just making a trail for us. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And we got to this point where it got to be too steep and we had to get off our horses and walk them down because it became too steep that we couldn't ride. So I tell people, just be careful. When you go out there, you never know what you're going to get.
And you're allowed when you make this reservation to ask, and you should ask, if there are groups that are going to be, you know, are the groups all mixed up, all different riding levels, or can I be in the experienced group and, you know, we can do more, or the middle
exactly.
group or whatever.
Yeah. And they typically usually, I mean, most places have that option that you're not, unless you want to ride with, you know, your family and maybe one of you is an advanced rider and the rest of you are beginners, and that's going to be a little bit different. But all the places that I have been, for the most part, I would say 90% of the time, there are, you have to prove that you can do it, but you know, you can go off and have like a more advanced ride for sure.
So if somebody's planning an equestrian vacation, what do you tell them? You know, somebody comes to you and say, I'm planning my first one. What, you know, what do I do?
I would
go to your website first.
Yes, and go to my website again? First, rideeta.com.
Start there.
And I would say, you know, try to do your due diligence, give them a call, ask questions, but look at the horses, look at how they're kept, pay attention to the culture of the barn, ask questions about the program, and then really trust what you observe, not just what they're telling you. And I think often the places that prioritize the horses are also the places that create the most meaningful experiences for the rider, because when the horses are thriving, everything else kind of falls into place, right? Everybody's happy. And so that's something that I have learned, and you can never ask too many questions. And I always ask people if there's not enough information on their website for you. And just in today's world, you know, I have never been denied more pictures or more things that I wanted to see, and just ask questions.
Mm-hmm. And Google's a wonderful thing, right?
Google is a wonderful thing.
And the other thing that's a wonderful thing now too, and I've been doing this in more instances, even when we book guests now that I'm not sure about, or I want to be sure about, let me put it that way, I ask AI. And I ask it specifically, tell me all the negative reviews on this location.
Oh, that's a great idea.
And AI then will give you a summary of the negative reviews. And then you can ask for the sources of those reviews. And it'll give you the links to those reviews so you can check them out. But that's a very quick way nowadays of going in and just saying, tell me the positives and negatives that you're finding in reviews about this hotel. I do it even for hotels now. Because I don't then have to go individually looking at all the different sources.
Right.
I don't have to go look at Google and Travelocity and all of that. I can just get it there, and it gives me the summary, and it's pretty accurate, especially if you ask for the sources, you can always go verify it. But that is a very quick way now to look at things, because it's searching. When we have a guest that I'm not too sure about, or just is talking about something that I don't know much about and I'm a little concerned, I will ask, has this guest ever had negative articles written? Have they been in trouble for anything?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. No, I will.
I need
that.
To start using AI for that.
Oh, you need to. Everybody should. It saves you a ton of time. That's the first thing. It's there. That's what AI is good at. Is taking a look at all the information, putting it together and giving you a... Now, is it accurate? It's probably accurate right now about 80% of the time.
Yeah.
It's gotten so much better than when it first started 2 years ago. But yeah, you should use it for this kind of thing, I would say. Then the other thing is you can ask AI for the locations of pictures about this, and it'll give you the locations of pictures of those places. And it even will go down, if they're labeled, it'll find pictures that are in... What was the old picture place that people used to store their pictures, but yet they were open? You know what I'm thinking of.
But I do.
It even brings those up. So, I mean, it is an incredible tool. I use Gemini for most everything, or ChatGPT.
Yeah, I just started using Gemini.
I find that it's a little bit more accurate than ChatGPT. Mm-hmm. And I think part of the reason is it's tied in with Google and it's trained by Google.
Right.
You know, so I think that's partly why Google has a little more access to information. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of you hate AI, but for instances like this.
Oh, it's helpful for sure.
And you know what?
Yeah.
I don't care what job you're in. You better learn AI.
It's true.
Or
it's
in 5 years, you're going to be out of a job. I mean, that's just what it comes down to.
Yeah.
It's just.
I use it a lot. So.
Yeah. I just thought, you know, I wanted to mention that here as a way to, you know, search for the negatives and the positives.
Yeah.
And
I
you
love
can
it.
Ask a specific question. Has there been any reviews on the food? Has there been reviews on the horses? Ask it. You can ask it specific questions. What's the town like that's close by? What are the highly rated restaurants? Let it do all that work for you.
Oh, yeah. Why do that yourself when you can just add? Yeah, really.
So anyway, I wanted to bring that up too.
I love it. That's a great resource that probably not a lot of people are using.
Yeah. And you really should. And you know what? You can't get it wrong. Just start asking. Be as thorough in your questions, though, with AI.
That's what I've learned. You have to ask the right questions and be very specific. Yeah.
It can be a paragraph or two paragraphs long, or bullet points. Just weed it down to exactly. Mm-hmm. Like AI now does all of our timestamps on our podcasts. Mm-hmm. And it's much more thorough than I ever was. because I would do, okay, the guest starts now, and the next guest starts now, and there would be 4 bullet points. Now we can have 15 bullet points, and you have the timestamps for when the guest changes their topics and what those topics were. Like, it'll do that for this episode today. And that's much more accurate than we were able to do as humans, just because it was too time-consuming.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah.
Gosh, how long would that take you? Forever.
It would take forever. take forever. So that's why we didn't do it. That's why timestamps have really come into play over the last couple of years, because it got easier to do. But anyway, sorry, off topic.
No, you're good.
Yeah.
I love it.
So what else should people know booking their first one? And talk to people. Talk to your friends that have done these trips. That's the other thing.
I mean, that's a huge resource. Like, if you know people who have taken these trips, talk to them. I know that's being really sought out now is people are just getting personal recommendations of trips. And so, talk to people who have done it. You can email me if I've done it. I'm happy to tell you the pros and cons of every experience I've had, and just do your due diligence about and really figure out what you want to do on your trip. I think a lot of people have this idea of like, oh, I really, want to go ride horses out in, Arizona. And then they get out there and they're like, oh, I don't like hot weather. You know what I mean? Like, you're in Arizona. Really think it through about where you want to go and what you want to experience. You'd be surprised. How much that happens.
And then I think one final question I've never asked you is how, I know people are people and every group has, positives and negatives, but do you ever use the Equestrian Vacation Facebook pages? There's a million of them for every different location and places. Or do you not trust what's said in those groups?
No, I trust them. A lot of the vacation, because I go in there myself and I will promote places. You mean on Facebook and stuff?
Yeah,
the different groups.
Equestrian Vacations in Ireland, Equestrian Vacations.
Yeah.
There's separate pages for all of them.
Yeah. You do need to be careful because everybody's just trying to promote, their own program. So I'm always, hesitant about certain things. But I think if you do your due diligence and look up that place, and I think it's always good to get a personal recommendation, even if it is somebody from online, and just message them directly. I've done that before where I've messaged people directly and said, hey, I saw that you took this vacation and had a really good experience. Can you tell me more? I've done that before and I don't know these people, but so you have to take it, with a grain of salt possibly, but yeah, I've done that as well. And then just, look up that program. I would say you're probably going to find more people with day trips on those things than, a vacation is what I have found is, go rent horses or, go on a trail ride on a beach in Ireland or things like that.
Very good. Anything else?
Well, I just want to say that I think when you do show up to these places, really pay attention to the horses and their attitudes and their bodies and their, and ask as many questions as you want to their staff, and see how the staff is treating the horses and how the horses are towards staff, because that will give you a lot of information as well.
Now, if they go to rideeta.com, what are they going to find?
So we have a directory of all of our members who have joined our association, who abide by a set of standards that we have created that have horse welfare at the top of the priority list, as well as customer service.
I wanted to remind everybody, too, that this travel show, as part of Horses in the Morning, has their own RSS feed. It's called Galloping Getaways. You can subscribe over there and go back and listen to all the past episodes. If you're looking at taking a trip, you know, this summer or fall, then you have almost a year's worth now out that you can go back and take a listen to a whole bunch of different places you can go and get firsthand experience from riders or from the places themselves, and listen to the past episodes there, and or go to rideeta.com. Of course, you can do that as well. And it is part of Horses in the Morning. We have our own podcast feed. Horses in the Morning is probably how you're listening to this now. But if you just want Galloping Getaways, just search for that in your podcast player.
Until next time, travel thoughtfully, ride with care, and I'll see you on Galloping Getaways.